Welcome to the Abundant Yoga Teacher Podcast. My name's Amy McDonald. I'm a yoga teacher, yoga student, and a yoga business coach. And I'm here to support you to share your yoga with the people in your community who really need it. So if you're an amazing yoga teacher, but you sometimes struggle with the business part of what it is that you do, you're in the right place. I hope you thoroughly enjoy everything I've got in store for you. And if you have any suggestions, questions, or ideas for future podcasts, reach out to me on Instagram at Amy Yoga Biz Coach. Hey there, welcome to the podcast. I am just going to call it like it is because guess what? Totally front of mind for me. I got dumped. So if you were wondering why I haven't had as many grueling, somewhat humiliating, but let's call them funny, dating anecdotes lately, it's because I wasn't having any of those shitty dates. I'd actually found someone that I quite liked. Yeah, that's an understatement. Anyway, last week, dumped.
Go.
Insert all of the crying emojis here. And also, I just want to make it very, very clear. I have an appetite currently, a voracious one, for any messages on Instagram along the lines of, well, they made a terrible mistake. You're fantastic. I cannot get enough of those. Happily receiving those DMs right now. It is like a bomb. So I'm going to talk more about what the F happened, but more importantly, what to do in times when you're feeling fucking devastated. You know, how do you assimilate devastation into yourself and use it in a useful way? How do you turn your shit into fertilizer? And where else would we go for advice, of course, but to the Ramayana? So we'll be talking about Sita and how, you know, she got dumped arguably worse than I did, although we both ended up sort of bumbling along in the forest, but I'll get to that momentarily. What do we do with that? And I've got four things that Sita shows us that I'm kind of working with. I don't know. Is it working? That and hot baths? Sort of. But before we do that, I want to say thanks to everybody who came along last week to the Yoga Biz Ananda sessions, bringing the bliss back to your yoga business. I had so much fun nerding out about the Bhagavad Gita with everybody and what Arjuna had to teach us in times when we're feeling a little slumpish, and what Krishna had to teach him about the importance of doing your dharma, your svadharma, understanding that it's better to fail at your own than try and pursue someone else's, and that the role of the yogi is to take skillful action even when it feels like you can't control the outcome, because as Krishna teaches in that text, we're not in charge of the outcome. We just get to do the best we can with what we've got, and the rest is up to things greater than simply our single separate selves. I got this lovely message from Karen about the Ananda sessions. She said, "Hey, Amy, I've just finished up watching the Ananda sessions from last week and wanted to say thanks. It's been a great pep talk, and the reference to Arjuna slumped in his chariot was pretty accurate for my starting point. The retreat days and special events I've been organizing this year have sold out. Congratulations, Karen. GYYB got me going on this, but then we've had to cancel many of them due to snap lockdowns, and I was feeling drained and disappointed about the perceived waste of time. Last week's training has reframed it for me, and now I'm feeling fierce about continuing and offering even more. So good. And I even got the Anjali Mudra thank you emoji." Well, you're so welcome. And again, thanks to everybody who came along and kept me company, because did I mention I got dumped? So it was great hanging out with everybody. Thanks so much. We did have such a good time. If you didn't come along to those, but you would like to check out the replays, I'll put the link in the episode notes. You don't have to sign up for anything. It'll just take you directly to the replay page, where there's 5-hour-ish long trainings, coaching sessions that, like I said, we're drawing on the Mahabharata and specifically the pretty much just the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, where Arjuna is like, I'm seeing the forecast, and it doesn't look good. And by the end of the week, I think we were all feeling a little more blissful. Also, last week I did make a sort of sneaky announcement that if anybody is interested in my Grow, Serve and Shine coaching package, so that's my 6-month one-to-one coaching package, doing a 20% off just for this month. So that's normally 10 grand Australian, so that's just 8 and a little bit more if you do the payment plan option. If you go to the Ananda Sessions replay, the info is there, or if you just want to hit me up on Instagram, I can send you links and whatever else. Before we get into Amy Sings the Blues, every time I am that emoji, like that's got the streaming eyes. You know when you've got, it's a two hanky day, I tell you what. I want to say a massive congratulations to Wendy and to Jody, who both today or over the weekend opened their yoga studios. So for anybody who's thinking this is the end of the yoga industry as we know it, no one will practice in person anymore, guess what? These two fabulous women in small towns have decided to do that thing and open a yoga studio. And congratulations to both of you wonderful women. I've had a look around Wendy's and I'm thinking about running some classes there. Apparently there's already two blokes who want to sign up for my yoga for men. So I think that's going to be a goer. But Jody, I can't wait to come and check out your space. And hell, now that my weekends are free, that might be sooner rather than later. Well done, ladies. Congratulations. And I'm loving seeing all of the socials. Yeah, great. Okay, so let's talk about the dumpage. Let's talk about the topic of this week's Abundant Yoga Teacher podcast, which is the mother of all dating anecdotes, getting dumped. So I won't tell you a whole bunch about mine because blah, whatever, boring. But what I do want to tell you about is, let me just preface it by saying you all know if you're a regular listener, I've been doing the dating thing for some time now, and you know, if you're a regular listener, that it has been an eclectic experience from the gentleman who asked me prior to our first date to get a Brazilian wax through to the gentleman who advised me while I was having a cup of tea on his sofa that the strange sounds emanating from the floorboards were wild guinea pigs that he was growing so that he could eat them. Yes, yes, that's what. I mean, they weren't all like that, but suffice it to say that I've had more misses than hits, and I thought I'd hit on a hit, and I was quite happy about all of it until the other day when I got advised that curious thing that it takes two people to start a relationship, but only one to end it. So I'm totally doing the eyes streaming emoji most of the time. And one thing that also happens for me when I'm feeling radically shit is my insomnia kicks in. So I've had lots of time to listen to audiobooks of, you know, during the evenings and through the nights. And, you know, you just can't, like my friend Dougal Meacham says, you don't need another book if you've got the Mahabharata. If you've got the Ramayana, you're sorted for life. You're never going to run out of stories there. So, of course, I turned to the Ramayana for solace and guidance about what did Sita do when her life was upended, when her husband said, get the fuck out and don't come back. So let's do a little bit of backstory about what's going on here, what the story involves, and then I've got 4 points that I'm using right now that Sita shows me. So if you're in a moment of devastation, it doesn't have to be a dating one. You don't have to have a broken heart romantically. Maybe you've had a website crash, or maybe you've had to cancel a retreat like Karen. Maybe you're just feeling devo for something completely unrelated to love and romance. Still think that Sita's teaching tips are useful for all of us. Right, so Sita is, she's one of the Ayonijas, which means she's one of the characters from these epic texts from the Hindu pantheon that was not born of a natural birth. She wasn't born from a yoni. She's a yoni. She has a more of a mythological birth. She was in fact tilled up out of the soil by her and raised by a fantastic guy, a bodhisattva, Janaka, King Janaka. He was not only a king, he was a great ruler and a righteous king. He was also a liberated being. So he had, you know, he's a beautiful teacher for us. And actually, we talked about this, I think, on day two of the Ananda sessions. He's a perfect teacher for us because he shows that you can have a foot in both camps. You can be absolutely in and of the world and at the same time separate from it or transcendent to it. So he was a good guy, let's just say. He was a bodhisattva. He's a good guy. He came back around to help people be better. He raised Sita. She turned out to be a top chick. And during her childhood, she encountered these two parrots in the garden. And turns out they were actually just passing through, a husband and wife parrot. The lady had a bun in the oven, parrot baby on the way. And Sita was chatting with these parrots because Sita was highly in touch with the natural world. She could talk to plants. She could talk to animals. Things would flower when she walked past because she is from the earth. She has that connection. She's represented by the earth element. She can speak to the animals. So these parrots are flying around, and so she starts chatting with them, and they said, "Oh, we're just flying through. We're actually, you know, we actually live over in the neighboring kingdom, and we hang out at Valmiki's ashram." And she's interested in that, and so she was asking them about what Valmiki was up to. What Valmiki, wise sage, aka perhaps, depends on who you ask, author of the Ramayana itself. And so they said, yeah, we're about to head back because we want to know what happens next in the story of Ram, which is what the Ramayana is. So far, it's only, you know, he's only just getting going and we only know so much. This is like meta in the extreme, which as a writer, I bloody love. Anyway, so she says, "Oh, well, I'd really like it if one of you would stay here with me." And they say, "No, well, she's pregnant and we want to go get the story. So we're going to fly back now." And Sita says, "No, you man parrot, you can fly back to the ashram, but you woman parrot, you have to stay here with me. I'm lonely. You have to stay here with me." And so the male parrot flies off, and the female parrot, so bereft because her lover, her partner has left, that she dies. She dies. And so male parrot, hearing the death of his beloved, curses Sita. This is not in the Ramayana. This is another text. This is the Puranas, Padma Purana. Curses Sita. And says, "This is going to happen to you too. You are going to be separated from your beloved and it's going to be catastrophic." Fast forward, Ram has won the hand of Sita, has married her. Excellent. They've gone back to the kingdom. It's all looking good. There's some challenges to who's meant to be the next king. Ram's stepmom pulls a Swifty and gets her son temporarily instated as the king and forces Ram into exile. He goes exiles in the forest for years with him. He goes with Sita, his wife, and Lakshman, his brother. While they're out there, Sita gets abducted by Ravana, who was there in the forest to avenge his sister who had been offended by Lakshman from having her nose and her ears cut off. It's convoluted. It's a long book. Ravana takes Sita to Lanka, and because Ravana had previously been cursed that if he ever took a woman against her will, he would instantly die, he really, really wants to bed Sita, but he's aware of his mortality, and so he spends the next year-ish trying to seduce her. He tells her, if after a year you still haven't come round, he can't rape her because he'll die, but he does say, "I will grok you into a soup and I will eat you." Right, that's happening. So back in the forest, Ram's like, "Holy shit, dude, where's my wife?" And so Ram and Lakshman do a deal with some monkeys, which I still don't feel good about ethically. Anyway, they were having their own dispute, two brothers fighting it out. There'd been a demon. It got confusing. Whatever. Now all of the monkeys help Ram to build a bridge to get across to Lanka, get Sita, and take her back to the kingdom. Great. Now, just before they go back to the kingdom, they're still on Lanka. They've won the war. People say to Ram, "You know what, dude, she's been on this island with this hot head, 10-headed demon dude who's known for, what does my friend say, getting the horn." I don't know. I think it's a fun phrase, but also gross. Anyway, Maybe she's not pure anymore. Maybe she's not fit to be your queen. We probably need to test this out. And so they ask her, hey, Sita G, if you're still pure, if you haven't actually had sex with that 10-headed monster who's now deceased, could you prove it to us by self-immolation? And if you're pure, you won't burn. And she's a good wife and she wants to prove her faith and her chastity. So she does that. She doesn't burn. Great. They all load up this magical chariot, which once you're in it, it's kind of like the TARDIS. It all gets very fancy and pimped out. They fly back to the kingdom. It's an overnight flight. And Ram and Sita, for the first time ever, finally get it on because he wasn't allowed to bonk his wife. It was part of the exile deal, whatever. Anyway, they're in the pushpuck, the magical chariot, and they have like a fantastic night of passion, during which time Sita falls pregnant with twins. That goes somewhere else later. They arrive back at the kingdom. Great. They have a ticker tape parade. It's all good. Diwali happens. Everybody's happy. Life goes on. Now, we're already six. This is actually the intro part of the podcast, but, you know, it's fun, right? So Amy, discipline, give them the abridged version. Okay, so the abridged version is someone hears some dude, a washerman, yelling at his wife. I think what happened is he beat her up. He was a shit to her. And so she came to Sita and said, hey, can I stay at yours tonight? Because my husband is an asshole. And Sita said, okay. But of course, the asshole washerman guy thought that his wife was being unfaithful. And so they're having this huge fight out in public. Everyone can see and hear them. And he says to her, don't think I'm taking you back. I'm not stupid like Ram. I would never let an impure wife back into my house. Now, everybody hears this. Everybody starts talking. And Ram, with the wise counsel of his ding-dong advisors, decides that for the benefit of the kingdom, he can't have this shit talking going on about his decisions as a ruler. He can't be second guessed by his people. He can't be undermined. He can't have any reason for people to think that he's not completely above board. So what does he do? He doesn't have a great conversation with his missus. He doesn't lay it out and get her to help troubleshoot. He doesn't ask her to get his needs met. No, no, no. Instead, he says to his brother, fuck man, what are we going to do about this? Can you just like get rid of her? So Lakshman says to her, I'll take you out to the ashram for the day. She's like, okay. Off they go into the boat, across the river, on the other side of the river. He chucks her out and says, good luck, and takes the boat, pisses off back to the kingdom, leaves her alone in the forest. This is like a seriously shitty thing to do to your beloved. It all got a bit too hard and you went, well, fuck, I don't know, like, just get rid of her. That's what Ram did to Sita. Now, Amy, why did you tell them about the parrots? Want to know why? When the male parrot died and was reincarnated, guess what body he was born into? Yes. Shipbird washerman. Yes. That's what happened there. So, you know, maybe Sita brought it upon herself. I don't think so. Like I said, that sub story about the parrots, it's not actually in the Ramayana. But anyway, it's a story. You know, women got to be blamed for their shit, right? So all of this to say that Sita did all the things. She tried really hard. She was really devoted to this guy. You know, they went through stuff. She was like, whatever, I don't care. So you got to live in the forest. I can do that. So you got to live in a bark hut. Okay. So I got to wear a sari made out of bark. All right. So I got to live in a courtyard with a 10-headed demon. Well, I can wait it out. So I got to walk through a fire so everybody knows my business about my vajayjay. Okay. And even then Ram's like, sorry, just can't even like talk it out. Just has to get rid of it. So I'm thinking, if I thought I was devastated, you know, it's always good for a little bit of, relativity. I wasn't that devastated. I'm not that devastated. Am I doing silly crying and avoiding listening to some songs? Sure. But I'm not Sita devastated. You know, does it suck that I got dumped? Abso-frickin-lutely. Is this the first time in like 4 years I thought I'd met someone that I was a keeper? Yes. Does it suck? fucking oath it sucks. But it is not the same as what happened to C2G. So I thought, well, what a perfect person to turn to. What the hell do you do when, God damn it, like you find yourself sitting at your kitchen table and you realize you haven't thought about anything or done anything for an hour, but you don't quite know what happened. What do you do when you've been devastated and it totally caught you by surprise? So here's what I took from what Sita did once she got dumped in the forest. Actually, let me tell you what happened. So she stumbled around for a while. Remember, she's wearing a whole lot of fancy bling because she'd been reinstated as the queen, and they liked to bejewel, bedeck royalty. Lots of fabric, lots of gems, you know, all the things, lots of stuff in her hair, all of it. Not exactly like alone couture, if you know what I mean. So she stumbles across, guess what, Valmiki's ashram, and he takes her in. And so she goes on to live in the ashram, not content in the short term, but over time, content to be there, study, practice. And like I said, she was pregnant with Love and Kush, her two twins, and she gives birth to them, raises them, and they become great men in the ashram. So she that's what happens to her. Despite being discarded, she sorts it out, and she ends up having, she goes through her brahmacharya phase, right? She goes through her celibacy phase. Wasn't the future she thought she was going to have, but she does absolutely turn her shit into fertilizer. So how does she do it? Now here are the four teachings that I'm taking from Sita in surviving my own heartbreak. Number one, she sought out wise and soothing counsel. This one's really important. She didn't, when she got to the ashram, there was just a small number of people that she explained what had happened. She was going through her process. She didn't eat for a long time. She just cried a lot. They were worried about her. Maybe she was going to lose the babies because she was of such poor health. Because she really was, you know, just devastated in the true sense of the word. But when she was ready to talk, she didn't talk with everybody about the specifics. And when she wanted counsel, she intentionally chose out the right people. Not that she didn't want to hear, you know, the tea. She wanted to be supported. But she didn't need unnecessary criticism. She didn't need to bruise and beat herself up more. And so she chose out wise and soothing counsel. You know, this is really applicable, obviously, to my own Devo situation. God knows there are some of my friends that are amazing. I have one friend. He's just so amazing. He just sends me random messages that say, like, he made a really bad choice. You're awesome. Like, you know, on the regular. It's great. Every time I'm like, oh, thanks. Sita did the same thing. And we all get to do the same thing in terms of our business. When it comes to talking about even the good stuff, but particularly the bad stuff, not all of your friends are going to get it. Maybe your partner is not the person to talk to about your frustrations with your studio owner, or your fear about your photo shoot. Maybe your best friend or your close friend in town isn't the person to seek business advice from. When you're going through a shitty time, be loving with yourself about who you ask for support. Not everybody, one, can do it, and two, wants to do it. You know, there are times when you just want to be heard out. You just want someone to tell you, well, he made a dumb choice. You're awesome. You don't want someone to give you advice. You should get back on the apps. No, thank you, but I'm not asking for unsolicited advice. So same goes for you and your business. If you be like Sita, be discerning in where you seek counsel and intentionally seek out wise and soothing counsel. Yes. So Sita sought out wise and soothing counsel. The next thing that she did, which I really turned to her and just thought, oh, thank goodness. Thank goodness you're showing me this way, C2G. It gives me permission to do this for myself, is that she let herself lose her mind. She lent into the pain. I got to a point where they were worried about her. You don't want to take it too far, But we don't need to, you know, pour pink paint all over everything. Just because you're a yoga teacher doesn't mean you have to be rainbows and sunshine all the goddamn time. It doesn't mean you have to teach a class based on how... I remember being in a class and the theme of the class was the teacher's divorce. That doesn't feel good to me. Like, don't do your processing on my time. But you know, it's important to recognize if you're in pain, be in pain. Don't smush those feelings down because you think you're not supposed to. I should be able to handle this better. I should be able to overcome this. Well, for Amy, well, shit, girl, this is not your first rodeo. Don't you know how to handle getting dumped by now? What I'm saying is Sita fell apart. They brought her food. She didn't leave her room at the ashram. She just stayed put. She, you know, shut the curtains and she lost it. She leant into the pain and she gave herself the time to do that. You know, she had her kind of, she did the whole like, shout out to my ex, you're really quite a man. You know, and then she was ready to do the, you made my heart break, but it made me who I am. She didn't pink paint it. She wasn't going full kind of Kelly Clarkson immediately. She dropped everything, lost her mind, and let herself feel all of the feels. And I think this is really key. When something's bad for you, you don't have to brush over it. You don't have to pretend it never happened. And in this teaching, not only did she give herself permission to lose it and go deep into the pain of it all, that's how she got to eat it. Right? You've got to pull it out and look at it so you can eat it, assimilate it, and transmute it so that you can shift it up. She went into it, but she didn't stay stuck. She let herself feel the emotions, but she didn't, you know, she didn't kind of linger there. She worked through it and then she moved on. And so for all of us, you know, it's okay to have a shitty day. It's okay to be like, fuck Facebook ads, I can't handle it, and go for a walk. You don't have to pretend that you're feeling good about all the things all the time. Let yourself be with what's actually coming up for you. We don't need to push anything down. Obviously, there's a time and place. She went to her room. She internalized it. It was her Svadhyaya contemplative practice time. But she didn't pretend that everything was okay. She let herself be with what she was experiencing, and then it came to its own end and she didn't stay stuck. The next one, number three, what Sita taught me or is teaching me, I'm still absolutely in it right now, is that she really leaned into nurturing self-care. She let herself be cared for. She let them bring her meals. She let them come and bathe her and help her change her clothes. They brought her things to journal with. Like, she kept her own records. She wrote love letters. She did all of that processing. She slept a lot. You know, she rested. And then she started to go out for walks and she started to re-engage with nature. She did things to really self-soothe. She really lent into the self-care. And I love this because, again, it's she didn't look to distract herself. She didn't just go get busy or go do something else or go commit to something else. She really loved herself back into being herself. And for me, I'm really inspired about this, that I don't need to just dust myself off, as my, you know, as my dad would say, dust yourself off, baby, and get back in the ring. I'm not kind of ready. Also, I don't like the fighting analogy for like my dating. You know, I don't want to be that person. That we sort of love ourselves back to fullness. This morning was the very final call for the 8th round of Grow Your Yoga Biz, the group training program that I run, and it was our celebration call. And we were reflecting on what everybody achieved and how, all the things that they were proud of and how they were going to stay accountable and engaged moving forward, and lots of lovely sharing happening during that time. And I was just passing on some based, like I said, it's the eighth time I've taught it. And based on having done that, there are some patterns that I see really work well for people who continue to go on and achieve great things, and some patterns that I see not work so well for people who don't sort of continue to grow, who sort of stay stuck. And one of the key points here that I where I really see yoga teachers excelling is the heavy emphasis on self-care. You know, I don't joke when I say an afternoon bath is part of my workday. Not because I'm listening to a lecture, not because I'm reading a text, not because I'm taking down notes as they spontaneously arise about what emails I need to send, but because I'm just relaxing and nourishing myself so that when it's time to go back to the computer and see all of my evening clients, I feel great. Self-care is so important in business. We need to love ourselves into fullness and to love ourselves to retain fullness so that we can be in service. You can't be an abundant business owner in a sustainable way unless your cup is running over. And I think the same is true for dating, right? Like, good Lord, imagine I go on a first date tonight with someone. I mean, am I at my best? No. Would I start bawling as soon as that person did something that reminds me of the dumper? Yes, I would be a hot mess. I need to get back to fullness, vibrancy. I need to, you know, it's a kick in the guts when someone tells you, actually, there's things about you that I really don't like, and I can't see this going anywhere. Like, that hurts, especially when you're like, hang on, I thought we were like just on a walk. Crack, really? It's a bit of a kick to the self-esteem that needs to be loved back to fullness. We need to do that for ourselves. If you spend $100 on a Facebook ad and no one bought anything, you know, you need to do the work to feel good about yourself again. You're not the worst advertiser ever. It was just an ad. It doesn't matter. It's going to be okay. You get to do what you need to do to nurture yourself back to confidence, back to feeling, you know, back to feeling grounded, back to understanding that you're awesome no matter what, that your worth is internally generated and can't be, you know, that sense of worth we feel like it's absolutely at the, you know, at the whim of those around us, but in fact the yoga teachings are so clear that inner wisdom, you know, that small self, the sort of the golden egg in yoga nidra, you can't break that stuff. That's fucking diamonds, man. It's not going anywhere. But self-care is required to make sure that light is burning really brightly. Dating, business, all of it. Sita, beautiful teacher here in that once she was ready to come out of her mourning period, once she had processed enough of her grief and shock and pain, how did she start to really reintegrate back into her newfound society? Self-care, 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 self-care. She leaned into nurturing self-care. And she said another thing, you know, this is same sort of point. She didn't like, she ate nurturing meals. I imagine there was a lot of kitchery. She was already at an ashram, but she let people help her. And I find this one for me is, it's tricky, you know, if I feel tricky talking about this with a couple of friends that I process this sort of stuff with. I don't want to burden them. I don't want to bore them with me saying the same thing six times. And yet they want to. They want to help me. So saying yes and thank you when people are reaching out to help us. Maybe, you know, your neighbors are bringing you meals, like Sita was brought meals to. Whatever that looks like for you as a metaphor, when you're re-emerging from devastation, saying yes when people are reaching out to help you, I think is really key. And then number four, this is so cool. So once she arrived, she was a hot mess. She lost her shit for a while. Then she started loving herself back into fullness. And then she sort of reinvented herself. Not because there was anything wrong with who she was before, but because she couldn't be what she was before. She was a queen before. She was Ram's beloved before. She was a part of a family before. And now she's living in an ashram. She's a single mother. She's got these two babies. She's, not partnered anymore. And she's certainly not a queen anymore. She's been cast out from the palace. She's not wearing her beautiful robes anymore. She's just living in an ashram the same as everybody else. So she retrained and she became like the herbalist she applied her knowledge, her plant wisdom, her connection to nature, the fact that she's born of the earth. She applied these beautiful skills that she has in new ways, and rather than pining for who she was before, right? She decided, no, actually, I have all these other pieces of me, and I'm going to celebrate those, and moreover, I'm going to use them to be in service. To the people who are now my community. This is who I am now. These are the visions and the plans that I can have for myself now. And I know for me, this person that dumped me, insert a bawling emoji. Did I mention that? Please send me a DM telling me that person made a bad choice and obviously I'm awesome. I'm serious. Send it to me. We still had, I thought, like plans, but we're going to do this together and we're going to be like that together and we're going to enjoy doing this and making that and finishing this. And when all of that's gone, it leaves a gap, right? And maybe that's true for you. Maybe it applies in a business partnership. I know I was talking to someone during the Ananda sessions and she was really going for it in a joint venture retreat. But the person that was arranging the venue and the primary kind of instigator of that project cancelled it. So now she has this void. Who am I now? I'm not the yoga teacher who's partnering on that retreat anymore. Who am I now? Well, what else have I got? Where else would I like to shine my light and celebrate my gifts and be in service to others, given that context that I identified with before no longer exists? And it's a situation where Sita shows me, and maybe this applies for you, I think it applies for Terry, that not only is the context now changed, but you had no control over the changing of the context, that someone else made the choice that no, this is not you in your entirety anymore. This significant piece is removed, and now you're sort of looking at yourself and thinking, okay, I got gaps. I'm not the queen anymore. I don't have Ram as my husband anymore. We're not a family anymore. I don't live in a palace anymore. So I'm still me. I just need a new context. How could I do that in a way that really celebrates all the things that I love and helps other people? And that's what Sita did. After she went through her grief, after she went through her healing, she then, it's like a fundamental rebrand, right? Like she was the devoted queen of Lord Ram, but now actually she's the ashram's naturopath. Didn't see it coming, but she makes a bloody good go of it and finds joy in it and finds pleasure in it and is in service. This is right livelihood. She's still pursuing her dharma in the way that she feels called to by helping other people, by using her connection to the earth and passing that on to people who can't or don't have that for themselves. So point number four is that she learnt new skills and she applied herself in Seva. So these are the four teachings that I am absolutely grokking on, that I learnt from or am learning. There could still be a post-it note on the fridge, folks. This is a fresh wound. What did Sita do when she was fucking devastated? One, she sought out wise and soothing counsel. Two, she retreated, but she didn't stay stuck. Three, she leaned in to nurturing self-care. Four, she learnt new skills and applied herself in selfless service, in Seva. Thanks, Sita G. Dunda pranams all round to the Ramayana for being one of the two go-to books that has the answer to every question you're looking for. And thanks for listening to my diatribe, everybody. Talk about teach what, you know, practice what you know. A quick check-in. Last week, the podcast from last week was the recording of the day one of the Ananda sessions. And so because of that, it didn't have any hidden lyrics. But this episode does. So if you spotted the hidden lyrics and you know what they are, take a screenshot of this podcast, post it as a story on Insta and Facebook, tag me, and put on the music, the song that you heard in this episode, and you'll go in the draw to win a complimentary 45-minute coaching session with me, valued at $250. I've got that down. What else? Oh, this is the PSA section, if you hadn't noticed. PSA number two, next Monday at Melbourne 7 a.m. time, so that's Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening, if you're in the US, UK, and thereabouts, is the next Patreon Abundant Contributor Level coaching session. So if you've been thinking about signing up to support the podcast on Patreon, if you want to join the next group business coaching call, so that's, it's not broadcast, it's just me and you and the others on Zoom. I think there's maybe five people at that level at the moment. That's coming up next Monday. So sign up for my Patreon before then and you can access that session. The link for Patreon is in the episode notes, or it's patreon.com/AmyMcDonald. The only other PSA for today is that the final, and I think maybe this might be the final for forever final. I don't know. Might be. Definitely for this year. The final round of social media confidence for yoga teachers is currently open. I've reduced it by $50 because life's been shit all around. So why the hell not? It's $149 Australian. It's a bloody good deal. It's a freaking great course. I can confidently say that. And I feel that there has been enough third party testimonials to that regard that I can confidently say that. So if you haven't done that course yet and you know you need it, get yourself signed up, amymcdonald.com.au/social. And again, link in the episode notes. Registration's closed for that at the end of the month. All right, everybody, it's time for me to go and open a new bottle of vodka and dance around my lounge room a la Bridget Jones. Just kidding. I've got cedar. I don't need that. Take care. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next week. So there you have it, folks, another edition of the Abundant Yoga Teacher Podcast. Hey, favour to ask, if you found the content useful, I would be very grateful if you could support this podcast by giving me a 5-star rating. And if you've got a moment, a review would be super cool. No pressure, of course. Like I said earlier, if you have any suggestions for podcast topics in the future, I would love to be in service. DM me on Instagram @AmyYogaBizCoach. Take deep care.